In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
Hello, hello, and welcome to Food Network Obsessed. This is the podcast where we dish on all things food with your favorite chefs, food influencers, and Food Network stars. I'm your host, Jamie Sire, and today we have a celebrated chef sharing her mission to bring African food to the masses. She's a cookbook author and the chef behind Zoe's Ghana Kitchen. It's Zoe Ajonya. Zoe, welcome to the podcast and Happy New Year. We're still allowed to say that, right?
We are still allowed to say that right up until the 1st of April, which is the actual New Year. So everybody stop panicking, stay in hibernation and stay prepping for the real New Year.
All right. We'll be ready in April. I want to start off by talking about the dish you made for your Dig In With episode on foodnetwork.com, because I feel like it really kind of encapsulates you, your journey. You made red confit plantains. Why is that dish important to you?
Yeah, so it speaks to the journey of me as a cook and a chef, and also the evolution of Ghana Kitchen, I suppose, over that 13 years that I was cooking. And, you know, when I launched Ghana Kitchen in 2010, it was really about really basic information, just getting across Africa is not a country. Ghana is a country, one of 56 within Ghana. Anyway, there were so many like stereotypes and so much information just to get across in the first instance. There wasn't room for a bigger conversation. As time, you know, progressed, I wanted to... It was always about changing people's stereotypes around the food, right? And it was always about putting value on West African ingredients and flavors to the same extent as other people thought of other world cuisines. You know, I really did want jollof to be as popular on the high street as a curry or ramen or whatever. So there was that. But, you know, the confit represents, it's a little bit of poking fun at the pretentiousness that can come with, you know, high-end cooking a little bit. But essentially, you know, it's a very simple dish that is essentially street food, right? It's street food. Plantain fried in red palm oil is kelewele. And then just, and this is how important language is, right? Changing the language around it suddenly elevates that dish into another realm, and it becomes a canapé. It becomes something exquisite to look at. It becomes something exquisite to taste just by slightly tempering how you cook it and how you talk about it, you know? So it's an evolution of Ghana Kitchen. It's an evolution of me as a chef, and it's an evolution of the conversation I was having, you know? And A, it's super simple and easy for people to make, but immediately we will take them to Ghana in terms of the flavor profiles, but also shows that journey, you know?
Let's talk a little bit about that journey, because as you mentioned, you started Zoe's Ghana Kitchen back in 2010. What was the vision at that time, and how did it evolve over those 13 years?
I started an MA in creative writing, and I was writing a book, which I've just finished 15 years later.
Wow.
And it was all about my dad, who's just passed away, incidentally. Oh, rest in peace, Dad. Mm. And Garner Kitchen was this tool, right, at the time for me to investigate my relationship with my heritage, with my dad, and with my identity, really. And it gave me what I come to understand later in life on the journey was this really was, not to get too woo-woo with it, but it was a kind of a spiritual awakening because it was this, the universe gave me this platform to describe who I was and what I loved and, you know, why I thought it was important that other people should share in this joy that I had, you know what I mean? And so it was about bringing African food to the masses. And then as time went forward and the other people entered the conversation and there was room for more nuance, it then became, okay, what else can this vehicle do? What else do we need to talk about? And I was coming up against a lot of supply chain issues from friends in Ghana and like, you know, chefs in Ghana I'd spoken to. And then it was about sustainably sourcing ingredients. And then it was about decolonizing the food industry. And then it became a little bit ever more political in what I was talking about. Then it became leadership and conscious leadership and empowering women. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So Garner Kitchen was always a tool, basically, like a Trojan horse to a fun way to get people to have conversations about much bigger issues in the world and really expand consciousness, like cooking up consciousness, right? That was my podcast. And that still is what I've been doing and still is what I'm doing now, but just through different mediums.
Yeah. I mean, is it bittersweet that you are kind of closing that chapter after so much it has given you?
Yes and no. I mean, you know, I'm a firm believer in that we should follow our joy, right? And whenever you follow your joy and your passion, it leads to success. And Garner Kitchen is proof of that pudding. I was not a trained chef. I had no experience in restaurants. I had zero experience in anything. But the universe could see the joy, right? And it could see that it was about something bigger than me. And so it just made it happen. The universe just moved mountains. And now, you know, my soul and my spirit is like, okay, you've learned everything that you needed to learn. You've imparted as much knowledge as you can impart in that space without taking any more bullets. Thank you. So it's time to move on, you know? And so I feel very proud about the contribution that I made in terms of pioneering West African cuisine. I feel very proud about the contribution I've made to inspiring a whole generation of entrepreneurs in that space. And I'm really satisfied with that, the end, you know, when the goat is done, when the goat's climbed that mountain, you've got to find a new mountain to climb. So I'm on to the next journey.
All right. Well, we're excited to see that journey unfold, but let's go back to, you know, one of those other mountains you climbed during these 13 years, and that is writing your cookbook, Zoe's Ghana Kitchen, the same name. And you've kind of described this as a celebration of your heritage, blending both Ghanaian and Irish cultures. How does this dual heritage influence your cooking style?
Yeah. Gosh, like in all the ways, because weirdly, I think people, you know, conceptually, even to me as a kid, mum is from this really tiny, sleepy place, right, in West Cork, Hamlet, even. Is it even a Hamlet? It's tiny. And then, you know, dad is from Accra. And it's like these two disparate worlds. But what I understood growing up is that there was a lot of similarities in those cultures in terms of like the meal, like food being super, super important and storytelling in and around the process of making food and serving food and eating the food. Like both those cultures really are ingrained in that habit or that custom. So culturally, you know, food was always about bringing the family together and, you know, not necessarily so that we all sit down and have a good natter and get to know each other, but it was often quite more rambunctious than that. But it was, you know, that's what it was about, was the communal side of it. And so, and my mum, you know, a lot of what I learned from cooking from my dad was super basic because he was even less than the cook than I was. Do you know what I mean? So much of the cooking I did was in Irish households growing up with my Irish grandmother. And it was my mum who kind of kept my dad's food alive in our house when he wasn't around. So inevitably there is, do you know what I mean? There's always these lenses through which we come to the food and, that's why Zoe's Ghana Kitchen is called Zoe's Ghana Kitchen, because it's not meant to be anybody else's Ghana Kitchen. It's really specifically how I experienced this food and how I came to love it. And it was through that lens of my Irishness and my Africanness. That was this, you know, merging. I don't know. It's, you know, I'm still trying to figure it out what happened, you know, but I'm here and this book came out of it. And I think anybody who comes from like a biracial household or from an immigrant household, I think this book really resonates with. And anybody who's lost touch with their roots, you know, I've had so many beautiful emails from around the world from, you know, Ghanaian people saying, I can't believe this recipe, red red's in there. I can't believe corned beef's in there. Like, and then Irish people going, oh, you know, there's just been, it's just resonated so much, even because of the little anecdotes in there. It just takes people home. And that's really all I ever wanted it to do.
Is there a specific dish from the book that you feel like perfectly embodies this marriage of these two cuisines and cultures that you've, you know, been talking about?
I'm so glad you asked. I have a handy reference here. Look.
Oh, perfect.
Ghana Get Irish, page 156. You can't get more Irish than this. It's basically, you know, it's an Irish stew, classic Irish stew, but I'm infusing, well, actually, there's a few different recipes on the page, but the Irish stew is easy, right? Everyone knows what an Irish stew is. And then it's just about infusing a few flavors from Ghana. So like grains of salem, things like that, just so that you have these aromats and these other slight profiles that like bring it all together. I used to do it once a year, St. Patrick's Night. I used to have a big supper club called Ghana Get Irish every year to honor my mother, because I always felt bad that dad was getting so much press. And that's how the Ghana Get Irish section ended up in the book, because it's an accumulation of all the recipes I used to do for St. Patrick's Night, basically. But we used to let our hair down those nights. Trust me.
I'm sure. I can only imagine what kind of party, you know, developed through the evening. You talk about, you know, these kind of nuances within the cuisine, especially, you know, when you're looking at these recipes, you know, from Ghana, from Africa. Can you kind of elaborate on the distinct regional variations in Ghanaian cuisine that you showcase in some of these recipes?
Yeah, I'm so glad that you asked the question, because we're in a world now where you can ask that question and I'm pleased to hear it. But for so long, I was being asked in interviews to kind of essentialize Ghanaian cuisine, right? And it's like, well, what's the basics? What's the core? It's like, well, I don't know that I can tell you that, because it's such a big country and with varying landscapes, right? So where my family are from, my grandmother's from Elmina, right on the coast, right? Fanti. So there's a really specific type of diet available to you living off the coast, right? You have all that gorgeous seafood and lush, like, forest and jungle around you, right? Even into Accra, you have that, and you have lots of farmland around Accra. Then you go up east into the Volta, and then you've only got a big lake. You've got the Lake Volta, so it's all lake fish. It's perch. It's now perch. It's tilapia. And all of those things are being dried and fermented to extend their lifetime, right? And then the further north you go, the more arid it becomes again. And so you're looking at a different type of cuisine again, where it's more fermented foods. It's more of your kenkes, your the use of dawa dawa, iru, fermented locust bean, precacy. It's just you. While you can get access to all of those ingredients across the country, you'll find regionally that because of the landscape and what's available to them, the diet is going to obviously honor and respect the environment. Unlike us in the States and in the West, where we have no respect for them. We're just getting strawberries in January and whatever. Do you know what I mean? So it's really that. It's like honoring what nature around us is providing locally, and that is the staple diet. So it's going to, you know, so inherently the diet changes according to the landscape and the region you're in. But, you know, obviously everybody knows what jollof is in Ghana, but also it's not the main dish. Like, everybody thinks jollof is a national dish, and it's kind of is, but it's not eaten every day. Whereas wache, which is also a rice dish, is more commonly eaten every single day, even though it's way more elaborate as a dish than jollof, where jollof is it's a celebratory dish. So, you know, it's for special occasions and Sunday after church and things like that. Anyway, I rambled a bit then, sorry.
But that's okay.
Yeah, it's a big place, so.
Yeah, and you kind of talked about reconnecting with these roots, and you did have a chance to, you know, go back to Ghana as an adult and kind of rediscover some of this heritage and really just expand your knowledge of the food. What are some of your favorite memories from that that trip back that really kind of impacted your perspective on everything?
Oh, wow. You know, I landed in Ghana. There's so many stories and some of them are in the cookbook. But, you know, as soon as I landed and I saw the heat coming off the tarmac, like my energy changed, like just landing. It just felt like coming home. And a lot of people will resonate with that if they've ever gone home to wherever their parents come from after a long time. But just that connection was magical. And then, you know, I was tearing around Ghana like a child with new glasses or something. Like, do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. It was so just the part where I got to be on my own and in community with the landscape and the people and traveling around and going into other people's kitchens, chop bars, eating there and then like peeking my head into the kitchens and saying, oh, do you mind teaching me how you did that? And those moments, those exchanges with people were like the ultimate magic because they were so curious about me. You know, I'm 6 foot at the time, massive afro, clearly an out lesbian and pale skinned, a Bruni, they called me because you're a foreigner. If you're not Ghanaian, you're a foreigner or basically white. Mm. Anyway, so, you know, just those beautiful cultural interplays and like sussing each other out. What do you want? Who are you? And then making friends with strangers in the process of learning from them, you know. So there's that. Then there was also just the fact that in my grandmother's house, like three different women gave me three different recipes for jollof and each one swore that theirs was like the one. You know, they were each from different regions. So that it showed me straight away because, you know, before I'd gone to Ghana, I was super conscious already the concept of cultural appropriation because I'd seen it so much in my life on TV. And being biracial, I really didn't want to be assuming ownership of this cuisine or trying to present that I knew more than anybody else or that I owned it. Do you know what I mean? It was like, I'm participating in this culture.
You're learning as well. Right. Yeah.
And so I was off before I'd gone to Ghana. I was nervous to like go out of the tradition of what I had been doing. But when I realized so much about how many fresh, beautiful ingredients. So my dad cooked that at tins, the end, you know, everything sardines, everything came out of a tin. So this abundance of freshness, this abundance of herbs and spices that had come through the colonial spice trades that I hadn't been aware of, the indigenous ingredients that I hadn't known were there, you know, the salem, the dawa, the things my dad wasn't really using. Mm. So, you know, it was like an explosion of learning. And it was also an explosion of understanding that what is authentic is what happens in your household. You know what I mean? What nostalgia is around the sense of the thing rather than how exactly perfect this thing is to a recipe from 1,000 years ago. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So I came back with a little bit of grace to extrapolate and play and be like, okay, I'm taking some license to do with this garden egg what I want to do with this garden egg instead of just chucking it in a stew and letting it mush.
Yeah. I mean, I guess one question I had while you were telling that story is which of the jollof rice recipes made it into the cookbook? And who did you offend?
Do you know what's interesting? Because there's four editions of this cookbook now, and I think each cookbook has a slightly different version.
Really?
Obviously. I think the one that I've most consistently cooked time and time again is my grandmother's one, because it's like you just don't mess with grandmother's words.
Right.
You know, if that's what grandmother loves. That's what grandmother loves. So my jollof spice blend is very much based on what the ingredients she used, you know, and like the technique might vary slightly, but the recipe and the ingredients is from my grandmother. Mm.
You've also talked about how your dad, you know, gave you your first cooking lesson at age 10. Do you have a specific memory from that lesson that left a lasting impression on you?
I mean, calling it a lesson is a stretch. look, my dad was a very laconic man. He didn't have many words available to him, but he had a big laugh and a big smile. And so that's what that lesson was. It was him laughing at my questions. So no, let me just tell you a story. So basically the recipe's in the book, but it's like corned beef stew. Yeah, basically he's frying off onions the way he always fries off the onions, right? With some curry powder, chili powder, probably more oil than I use today. Mm. And it's wicked smell, right? The kitchen window's open, it's summer. Picture it. Come back with me to Walmer Terrace, 1986. Anyway, you know, and there's children playing out there. The curtain's blowing. He's got his shirt off because he's skinny and fit. Anyway, and it's splat, splat, splat. I was happening in the frying pan. And I'm like, oh, Dad, I think, but I'm seeing the onions burning. I'm like, I feel like those onions are burning. And I'm like looking at him, does he know that onions are burning? And I'm like, Dad, should we turn it down? And he's like, all right. Anyway, so it's not that he's telling me anything. I'm just observing him do it like consistently. Anyway, but the one piece of information I get from this Air Marks lesson is, you know, so he puts the chalet sauce in, opens his cans of corned beef, cuts out, puts it in, puts boiled eggs in. And then he's letting it sit there and go, you know, when the sauce is drying and it's getting holes in it, like it's like, I'm dying, feed me. I need hydration. And so I'm watching this and I'm smelling, again, some singe. And I'm like, and also it's spluttering up on the back of the splash bag. And I'm like, Dad, do you think we should turn it down? And then he's like, again, massive laugh. When it is up on the splash back, it is done. And then he turns it off. So basically the lesson was, you know, just cook it until it's about to burn, which isn't the ideal lesson. And obviously that's not how I provide the recipe in the book. But do you know what I mean? It's like, to call it a lesson is a stretch, but it was an experience of having fun and being a little bit scared of watching him cook. And that's how it was, learning by osmosis largely, do you know what I mean? And it was learning through his enjoyment of the food, because he was kind of greedy in his nostalgia for home. And initially he would like bring home kenkei and shito. I don't know if you've ever tried kenkei and shito,
but I don't think so.
With some sardines. Oh, babe, let me tell you.
What is it?
It's the mothership is what it is. So kenkei is fermented corn dough. It's a bit like tamale.
Okay.
It's really, really similar to tamale. And you steam it and you have, and shito is this traditional hot pepper sauce condiment that's like made with like smoked prawns and smoked crayfish, and it's, you get different heat levels, but my dad always had like the hottest of the hot. And it's such a magical, the fermentedness with the heat and the fishiness is out of this world. I'm going to call it my third favorite book dish from the cookbook. Anyway, so I would be watching him like having this greedy, like, and he's eating with his hands. And I'm like, oh my God, that looks like so much fun. Why can't we do that? You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it was like having to like bully my way into his moment a little bit.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean?
What did he think of, you know, the career you built for yourself, really, you know, discovering these foods and these flavors, you know, throughout your life?
You know, I think he thought it was hilarious because, you know, I was supposed to be a lawyer or a barrister even. Am I still yet? And I guess it was such a, you know, it threw me for a loop. So I'm pretty sure it must have threw everybody else, right? But I know he was proud, that's for sure. Mm. He was very, very proud of me, especially if I was in The Guardian or like some big, like the New York Times, something big like that. Definitely his pride would go through the roof. But I don't know that he actually really got it, like what I was doing or what the bigger idea behind it was. But I think he loved the fact that I was doing it. And I think he was just like, wow, this kid is crazy. Go Zoe, you crazy kid, you know?
Yeah. Well, I think I think you got some of his laugh for sure, because, you know, you can hear your joy and your passion for what you do. I also love that you have a companion playlist for your cookbook. How does music influence your cooking?
I mean, music influences so much in my life beyond cooking. It's frequency. You know, I'm a big into back into woo-woo land with Zoe Adjonya.
Love it.
I'm big into frequency. Everything is energy, you know. I'm really a big proponent of explaining that to people, right? And when it, you know, music has always fueled my soul and healed my soul, and dancing and movement through music has always done, it's been that for me. And it was that for my parents as well. Like, there was a lot of music in my house growing up and a lot of dancing. And so there was always music in the background when we cooked, right? And I think that music is another one of those tools, because it speaks to a frequency inside of us that says things we can't say with words. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And it's artistry, right? And being a cook or a chef is also a form of artistry, but not in the way I think some people project it to be. Like, I really believe that food, when you have the gift or the blessing to be able to cook for other people, I think the responsibility is to tell a story from your heart. With any art, you know, with music, with all art, it's like we should be communicating something from within our souls through the medium we use, whether it's food, music, whatever. So when there's an opportunity to bring more than one medium, one's senses together, I will always jump on that opportunity, because it's about exploring as much of our senses in the moment of enjoyment as possible, and then being able to, reflect that out. So that's why there's a playlist, because music and food are two combinations of soul speaking, you know?
Yeah.
That's what it is.
Can you share like a specific track that pairs like exceptionally well with one of your favorite signature dishes in the book?
Well, there's a playlist to cook to, and then there's a playlist to eat to.
Oh, so love that.
There's two playlists.
Okay. Well, pick whichever one you want or both.
I know William, there's a 10-minute William Onyebuor track on there. And that's the track you want to play when you're plating and bringing it to the table. So when it's like the end of the cook time, then just get in the energy of the track.
I love it.
So you're going to play the... Okay, so William Onyebuor is going to come on, and it's going to be like the flourish, because it's like, oh, I haven't... Because also, if you're following my cookbook, you haven't had to do very much, babes. The ingredients are working for you, okay? So you're going to pretend like you've been sweating in the kitchen.
Sure.
And here's your grand flourish finale, and it's like, onward, Onyebuor. It's like, look what I have done. Hey, look what I am doing. I have prepared a meal. And then you're plating it, and you're like, you're in the energy of success and joy, and you're going to bring that energy into the food, right? Because your energy is going into the food that you just cooked. Your energy is going into the food as you're plating it. And every moment that song will inspire joy within you, I know. And you're going to put the plate down on the table in front of people, and they hear that music, and they see the food, and they feel the energy that you've just put into it with that music. Everyone's having an amazing time. Everybody's going to have an amazing time around that dish. And I don't care how badly you cooked it. Because the secret to good cooking is the energy you infuse into it. Mm. I very strongly believe that. You can skip an ingredient, or you can translate it for something else or whatever, but it's about the energy that's inside the dish.
And the love, right?
The love, absolutely.
When we come back, Zoe talks about her work beyond the kitchen and what's next for her in 2024.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas. Big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
You know, beyond the kitchen, I know that your work really extends to education and advocacy. What knowledge do you hope to impart on those not familiar with Ghanaian cuisine?
God, there's so much to say. Do you know what? My advice to anybody is, and it's, I don't have the answer because there isn't one answer, because we are all going to come to this differently with different experiences and different expectations and different sets of knowledge and all of that. And whenever I've been in a kitchen with like younger chefs and they're like, chef, chef, tell me something. Some people think they're entitled to your knowledge, by the way. I don't know you, kid. Who are you? But here's my advice regardless. Be curious, right? Come to everything as a student and don't stop pretending that you know everything, because you really don't. When it comes to food, when it comes to cooking, whether it's in your culture or out of your culture, just be curious. Mm. And in curiosity, have fun, you know, play in that curiosity. And, you know, a lot of people are scared to cook or they think they're bad cooks. Everybody can cook, right? Take the pressure off yourself. It's just about having fun and curiosity with ingredients at the end of the day. And in doing so, being respectful to the cultures you are having a relationship with, because that's all this is. I'm encouraging people through Zoe's Ghana Kitchen to have a relationship with Ghana through its food, because in this book, there's the food, there's an index, there's a glossary, there's all the education you could want, right, about the ingredients, but there's music so you can connect with the culture. There's stories about me and my family so you can connect with an experience of being in that culture and being outside of it. So it's about, it's an invitation to be as curious as I am in the world. And you don't know what's going to come from that curiosity.
I love that. Be curious. That's definitely something that I try to do with these interviews as well. So thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom and knowledge. We talked about the new year at the top. Can you share any upcoming projects that you're excited about this year?
Yes, I'm going to be doing my final cookery classes at the end of January. So anybody who wants to cook along with me, please visit zoesgarnerkitchen.com for that. I'm also launching a coaching program for conscious leadership for women who want to be more authentically aligned with their mission-driven businesses. And anybody that just wants to break out of whatever limiting beliefs that are holding them back from being their most authentic selves. So come check me out on Instagram or go to zoeajonya.com and sign up for your interest there. But yeah, this year is really a lot. Oh, and I'm going to be doing loads of retreats. So
love
if anybody
that.
Wants to come on a retreat with me or cook at a retreat with me or wants me to cook at a retreat or speak at a retreat, I'm available. But yeah, this year is, you know, 2023 for me was closing out a lot of big cycles, divorce, moving, changing careers, a lot of grief and, you know, coming back to myself essentially. And 2024 is about sharing what I've learned through that process with everybody and hoping and encouraging other people to get on the growth train and, yeah, be their best selves. So same story, different angle.
A little bit of a fresh start, a rebirth, if you will.
Yeah. Season 7 in Zoe Ajonya is ongoing.
The story of your life is a new season coming up.
And a podcast. Sorry.
And a podcast.
There's so much. Black Sheep Energy podcast coming also. There's
what's
a lot coming.
What's going to be the focus of the podcast?
Well, this, you know, consciousness and healing and, you know, it's a bit woo-woo. I'm not going to lie. There's going to be some woo-woo.
Woo!
Honestly, it's a lot about me sharing my experiences. Some of that will be about hospitality. I'm just going to be very open, honest, and frank about what my experiences have been, what my learnings have been from those experiences in life, business, love, all of it. and, you know, inviting guests on to share their thoughts and opinions. But largely, it's really about my healing journey and hoping to encourage other people to, you know, get on their own healing journey, because the rewards are fantastic.
Well, welcome to the podcasting world, and we look forward to listening to you imparting more wisdom and more stories on your own platform. We're going to finish things off with a little rapid fire round, and then we have one final question for you here on Food Network Obsessed. All right, rapid fire round. Your favorite Ghanaian spice?
Grains of Salem. Of course, you can go to my website to learn. But Grains of Salem, it's this gorgeous little pod, like peppercorn pod, very musky. When you snap it, you open it, it's like a smoky barbecue with jasmine and black cardamom notes, and it just keeps opening up and enveloping. So why I love it is because it's the kind of thing you can make tea with, or you snap one or two into a stew. Doesn't matter what it is. Like, it could be a pasta sauce, it could be a soup, it could be a broth. But it does so much work on your behalf. Don't forget, I'm that lazy chef. I want to do as least, honestly, as little as possible to get the best taste. And that's one of those ingredients that helps with that, because whether you're grinding it to use in a spice rub, or you're infusing it in a dressing, or you're, you know, using it as a stock enhancer, it's so versatile, but it is one of those ingredients that just keeps giving, you know?
Love that. All right. Well, on the ingredient subject, one ingredient you cannot live without. Is it that one or a different one?
Oh, God. It's going to be boring. It's going to be onion.
I mean, yeah, same.
It's an onion. I can't think of much I can cook without an onion, honestly. And when people are allergic to onions, I'm like, oh, you poor thing.
I know. My mom is not allergic, but she's intolerant. So, you know, holidays, I just make her own dish because I have to put it in mine. So I make her own, you know, little casserole of stuffing, or, you know, whatever the dish is that probably has onions. I make her own special so I can still have it in mine.
It's so simple, but it's so, you know, it's such an essential, I think.
It is.
An onion.
I love it. Favorite Irish dish?
Ooh. Oh, it's got to be mum's cabbage and potatoes. It's going to be straight out of the gate, stereotypical, but a bit of gammon and cabbage. And specifically Irish potatoes, because they are phenomenal. Fluffy poppies. Yeah. But my favorite Irish ingredient would be Clonakilty black pudding.
Okay.
Sorry, vegans.
Dream travel destination.
Oh my God. You're playing with me. Are we going on holiday? Right now, it's the Maldives.
Maldives. Do you have anything in the works, or it's just on like the vision board?
It's on the, I mean, there's so many on the vision board. Maldives is high up there. Also Madagascar. I really want to meet a tiny monkey. I really want a tiny monkey wrapped around my thumb like that.
What? I don't even know about that, but that now it's on mine. All right. Food Network chef you would love to cook with.
Do you know who I've got a lot of time for?
Who's that?
It is Farielle from Havenmar.
Oh, she's lovely. We've had her on the podcast. She is just a ray of sunshine, for sure.
She's a sweetheart. And I think she is going to be the example of conscious leadership that hospitality is really sorely lacking. And I did not have the metal to stay and deal with. But I think she will be a beacon for a lot of young women of color and just women generally.
Yeah, I think so too.
Yeah, I've got a lot of time for her. And yeah, I'd love to cook with her. Why not?
Go-to comfort meal.
Always peanut butter stew, recipe in the cookbook. Yeah, it literally, I mean, I've said this description probably a million times at this point, but it is like being cloaked in a hug. Like, and that is whether you've been to Ghana or not, whether you've eaten it before or not, it is instant nostalgia in a bowl. And it just is so comforting. It just feels like being wrapped up with like huge arms, you know, like the most loving hug.
What kind of flavors, if somebody out there has not had the pleasure of trying it, what can they expect from a peanut stew, or your peanut stew specifically?
Yeah. What, peanut forward?
Mm-hmm. I would hope so. You're going to call it peanuts too.
No. So, you know, what I love about it is it's got this spicy piquant kind of note to it, right? Because it's got these different heat elements in there, but it's got this huge, sweet, nutty overload from the peanut butter. So like when that, and if you are cooking my traditional version, which is going to be using like mutton or neck or something like that, you also get that added, you know, rooted headiness that you get from those cuts, right? That those maturer cuts give you a beautiful kind of grounded flavor. Anyway, so you've got this grounded, sturdy flavor, right? And on top of it, you've got this playful piquancy. And then you've got this big sweet notes bouncing around. And look, the way it all comes together. And then if you're using Gary, you get like a nice crunchy texture. If you've got some plantain, you've got that extra mouthfeel with the succulent bite. It just all comes together in a mouthful, like heaven. It really does.
All right. Well, our final question, and this might be part of your final question as well, but it is, what would be on the menu for your perfect food day? So take us through breakfast, lunch, dinner, dessert. You can travel, time travel. Anyone can cook these meals for you, living or dead. Like, there's no rules. Basically, calories don't count either. No, we just want to hear like your ideal food day for all of those meals.
Can I say buffet, buffet, buffet?
If you want to, it is your day. As long as you kind of give us some ideas of what you might be partaking in the buffet.
Okay. I was lucky enough to go to on a couple of retreats to Costa Rica and Bali last year. Those kind of situations are my dream food situations because I ain't got to do shit. And it's just like, so like breakfast buffet, and I am getting a bit of all of it. Okay. I'm taking the oats. I'm taking all of the things that come with the oats, all the nuts, all the fruits, getting all of the fruits, doubling down on all the fruits. I'm going to get some scrambled eggs. Mm-hmm. If there is bacon, yes, I'm getting pork bacon. I'm getting all of it. I'm getting the juices, getting the coffee, I'm getting the green juice smoothie. Lunch will be more grain and leaf heavy.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm thinking bulgur wheats, I'm thinking barley, I'm thinking farina, I'm thinking all of those good. I'm thinking fonio, and I'm thinking leaves and, you know, gorgeous cherry tomatoes, English cucumbers, all that. And for dinner, I'm thinking fish.
Okay.
Especially if I'm on a retreat. I don't really actually eat meat very much anymore, to be honest. Seafood all the way, every night, if I can. Shrimp, prawns, sea bass, trout, salmon, tuna.
The full buffet.
The full buffet.
And are you eating dessert?
Do you know, if I can, squeeze it in, if there's room. Do you know, I love chocolate, I'm not going to lie. But also, I'm not a huge dessert. I would much rather buffet, buffet, buffet and leave dessert. Mm-hmm. But I can have like a molten chocolate.
Okay.
Anything that's like triple chocolate, I'm in.
It's like decadent, you know.
Super over the top. But also like a treacle, this is so English, but like a treacle pudding.
Okay. What's that?
It reminds me of like, it's weird because it reminds me of school and school dinners were terrible, but there's something about, it's like a sponge cake cooked in treacle with treacle poured over it on top. And it's with like custard, hot custard. God, that's making my mouth water a little bit thinking about that.
Well, it sounds like a wonderful food-filled, perfect food day for Zoe. And thank you so much for, you know, sharing your story and your journey. And we can't wait to see what else is next for you.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
You can catch Zoe's episodes of Dig In With on foodnetwork.com. Make sure to follow us wherever you listen to podcasts so you don't miss a thing. And if you enjoyed today's episode, please rate and review. We love it when you do that. That's all for now. We'll catch you foodies next Friday.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.